Merging with Shiva, Lesson 241, Interpreting Our Dreams. In the early 1980s, just before Sri Lanka's civil war, I was invited by the government to travel through the country and visit all who were attached to our Siva Yogaswami Parampara during the past century. There were massive parades, for miles and miles in villages we passed through, grand receptions, rides on great chariots and hundreds of garlands from those who came alive for the event. All during these times, knowing that war was imminent, I preached that Shiva's devotees do not fear death. It is only a passing into another life. Later, at the height of the civil war, when my devotees were experiencing the transition and the killing and torture, it was perplexing to me to understand how people that were so high in consciousness and culture could go so low. In many, many astral conscious states, I visited the lowest chakras, protected by devonic helpers and unseen by those within them, and discovered for myself these regions before ever reading about them. Having never read a book from cover to cover in my life, and having been trained from very early years, 16 or 17, to have the experience first, and then somehow or other, it would be verified by scripture later on. This was my path. I was told that to know what was coming up in the experiential patterns of spiritual unfoldment could be to put into the subconscious mind. The experience and memories of it, which would not be the experience at all. This, I was taught, would build a spiritual pride that would deter one from the path to self-realization. Very carefully I observed this, fully understanding the wisdom of the advice. It was amazing to me to have verified in obscure scriptures that the chakras or talas below the muladhara were exactly as when I visited each of them, guided by mighty devas who have the power to go anywhere within the mind. Life has taught me that knowledge is best when it is experiential, not intellectually learned and then remembered. This I have endeavored to impress upon my devotees over the past 5 decades. Hindus say there are kinds of dreams conjured from the needs of the individual, and then there is another kind that is sent by the gods. I myself have appeared in dreams to people that have never seen me, seen my picture, or even knew of my physical existence. Gods communicate by pictures. Therefore, certain kinds of dreams have meaning if they are sent by the gods. Signs, symbols, and body language to the Asian people have great meaning. For instance, folding your arms across the chest in the West is resting them. In the East, it is a sign of disdain. Dreams from the gods come to very religious people who live a disciplined life of sadhana, rising at 4 a.m. and living Hindu Dharma to the best of their ability to understand it. They have attracted the attention of the gods because they have penetrated the realms of the gods. If they let down, then they would not have those kinds of visitations any longer. The average lifetime is about 80 years in the United States. The average time someone sleeps is about 1/3 of their life. Therefore, we are dreaming about 27 years of our life. We assume that dreams only occur when the physical body is asleep. But what about the unproductive thoughts, the daydreams? Thinking about unfounded fears, the uncontrolled states of waking mind, mental arguments, mental fears, and the uncontrolled combative thoughts, fantasies, sexual, violent, tender, loving, worrisome, fretful, indecisive, or gruesome. If someone confesses his dreams he had at night, he should also confess his dreams during the day. The ancient scriptures say that dreams are like our waking thoughts in this way. If we dream and forget the dream, it is as though the dream had never happened. If you think a thought during the day and forget the thought, it's as though the thought had never happened. It's when we remember and speak out a dream, or remember and speak out a thought, that it has reality on this plane.